Today I'd like to just, you know, visit with us about a few things that come up from time to time. The other night I couldn't sleep, and I learned from Vax Ball, who's Vice President of Marketing of Mobile, a great friend of mine, that when you can't sleep, don't lay there and beat the feathers. Get up. It just sounds so simple. But it really has been one of the great things I've learned. And I've done a lot of work in the middle of the night or the middle of the morning just because I learned to quit beating the feathers. And what I do, I get up and I go out to JoJo's and have coffee. I was sitting there at the counter having coffee, and a couple of gals sitting beside me. They'd been waiting bar all night, and one of them said, the other said, why do you live like you do? The other one said, that's just where I am. She said, that's no answer. She paused and she said, that's the only answer I got. And I thought, here are people without options. Here are what I call 24-hour-a-day people. People are just trying to make it through the night and trying to make it through the day. Make it through the night and make it through the day. They're living in a cave. I'm not one who grabs lapels. I would love to just sit down quietly and said, you know, don't have to live like this. There's an option. There's an option. I think that's what we're talking about, the options that are good for living. We have 25 executives who exchange memos with each other. When we read something good, we send it around each other. I was reading that business journal from the Harvard of the Southwest, Texas A&M. And, you know, incidentally, I'm not decrying them because I lectured down there for 17 years, and I have a great respect for Texas A&M. And they gave the award last year to Harold Hook, you know, for the Executive of the Year. If you haven't read his acceptance speech, I suggest it. I sent it around to 25 friends. Excellent. He said there are three important questions. One, are you happy with what you're doing? I talked to a young man from the East last week, dropped in. He's going to be living in Dallas. Very bright guy. And I said, tell me where you're going to be in 5 years. He said, well, I think I know, but I'll tell you one thing. I'm going to be among people who are enjoying what they're doing. What a wonderful opportunity to live with people who enjoy what they're doing. Hook said the second question is, are you happy with where you're going? Are you happy with where you're going? It's one of the things that I'm bothered about. In fact, I'm writing a book now on the measure of progress. Because I find people are really not having criteria for where they're going. You know, we're running so fast. But where are we going? Are we happy with it? Third question is, you're satisfied with what you're becoming? I see a lot of people end up hollow. Simply because they haven't said, am I satisfied with what I'm becoming? I have a son who's 40 years old and one of my dearest friends. He called me and he said, Dad, you think I'll flip my lid? You think maybe I'm out of my cage when I tell you what I've done? You know, it's a marvelous thing to have gotten your son to the age where that doesn't scare you. You know, there's a time if he'd have said that to me, I'd said, oh, no. I mean, but I knew it would make sense, so I said, well, you're done. He said, Dad, this morning I got up and I liquidated all of my stocks and bonds. I said, do you know something I don't know? I thought maybe he had a pre-word on the rapture or something. And you want to leave it with the heathens. And he said, no. I said, losing money? He said, no, I've done very well. I said, why'd you do it? He said, Dad, I'm tired of getting up and grabbing the Wall Street Journal the first thing in the morning. He said, I've dedicated my life to something besides making money. And when I read this thing that you sent out from Harold Hook, I said, I'm not satisfied with what I'm becoming. Everybody shouldn't do that. I said, son, that makes sense. That isn't your priority. I had dinner with him Friday night. That was on Wednesday. Friday night, I had dinner with him. I wanted to check up and see if he'd had any second thoughts. And I said, how you feel? He said, free. He said, Dad, I feel just like I did when I quit smoking. He said, for years, I tried to quit smoking. I couldn't get away from it. And when I finally broke with it, I felt free. He said, that's the way I feel again. I thought it was made a lot of sense. Mary Alice and I were invited to come to Guilford College, where they asked me to be a visiting scholar in residence. It kind of makes me laugh because I never went to college a day in my life. They didn't know that. I was there a short time, they found it out. The President, Bill Rogers, is a great human being. I love to brag about my friends. Don't you, Bill? You know, I love to know there are people like that. Here's a man who's restored a Rolls Royce with his own hands. He's a sculptor. He's an artist. He sang professionally with the Boston Symphony. A great international scholar. President of Guilford, done a great job. 45 years old. Wonderful guy. And we were over there having dinner at their home, and he and Beverly. And they're Quakers. And he picked up a zither. And he just sat down and sang the old Quaker song. 'Tis a gift to be simple. 'Tis a gift to be free. 'Tis a gift to come down where you ought to be. There's something great about that. Something free about that. I was in Miami holding a seminar for 4 days. And one of the wonderful women, and you meet so many marvelous people, Gigi Caldwell is one of the fine decorators of the beautiful homes of Miami. Gigi married an All-American. In fact, he played at the Army, and he played against Roger Staubach when he was All-American at Navy. And they went back for a game shortly after they married, and somebody sideswiped the cab. He fell out and killed himself on the curb. And for these years, she has been a widow. So I said, Gigi, how'd you get into decorating? She said, not by choice. Not by choice. And I've been collecting, I hope you'll give me, I've been collecting stories of women who have become great out of tragedy. Bonita Van Caspel, some of you may have attended her meeting here on finance, a dear friend, I've been on her television show several times, was waiting at the airport for her husband, a doctor. The plane crashed. He was dead. She went into securities and has become one of the best in the business. She's sold 850,000 copies of her book, Money Dynamics. Came out of tragedy. Mary Crowley, Civic Club, giving her a little money in Sherman. Look what she's done. One night I was at a meeting where she gave $1 million. And I said, Mary, you know, you're so generous. She said, do you know how I've written my will? Being of sound mind, I gave it away. I thought that was so good. And you know, I was reading an educator the other day. Widow at 30, went into the study of dyslexia, made a great contribution. Mrs. Howard Butt, Howard Senior's mother, a widow, started a grocery store in the front room of her little house. And Howard Senior took a little red wagon and pulled the groceries through the streets of Kerrville. Of Harlingen, and now HEB. I got such a kick out of reading that full page the Associated Press did about Charles. Marvelous, marvelous friend. Mother Ann, who started the Shakers, they did a documentary on her the other day. If you know these stories, would you just call me and pass them on to me? I'm collecting and seeing. It's a wonderful thing. The Kinzer Foods, Grace Kinzer. Heard Charles Fuller on the old-fashioned revival hour, and he was asking for gifts, and she gave him $5, and Fred came home mad because she'd given $5 that they couldn't afford. So she started cooking up jams and spreads in her kitchen to make the $5 back. You know what happened? Fred started working for her. I've always thought there was something nice about that, and he didn't seem to mind it, but she became very successful. Many times out of our tragedy comes our triumph, particularly with women. You know, the thing I find about life, we need to make it more homogeneous. We've segmentized our life so much. We need to blend it. We have segments for business, segments for family, segments for church, and the church is to blame a lot of this. We seem to pack all of our spirituality in the church meeting, and we don't spread it out throughout our life like an homogenous thing. We sectionalize it. We talk differently. We think about different things. Sometimes you go on a retreat and use up all your religious thinking for the whole year. It's kind of like, you know, get through it like eating your spinach when you were a kid. Instead of spreading, I was listening to Bill Buckley talk with Muggeridge over the television. And Buckley said, Malcolm, you're so relaxed about your spirituality. He said, do you find it easy to talk even in social circles? He said, why, certainly. Buckley said a very strange thing. He said, I would be totally embarrassed, intimidated, to talk spiritual things among my compatriots. I felt sorry for him. He's a highly literate man. He's a wonderful man. But he's got his spirituality compartmentalized. Instead of letting it permeate the whole. In talking with these singles, and I did a retreat over the Memorial holiday. They have a great thing down in Key Biscayne Presbyterian Church. They go off on a fun in the sun, and they take off for 4 days and go to some good watering hole. This year we went to the Hilton Hotel in Marco Island. Nothing like suffering for Jesus. And 90 singles, and we just sat and talked for 4 days. I went there to deliver 5 speeches of 2 hours each. That's what they asked me to do. I'd been there 4 years before, and when I looked at them, I said, man, there's no point in speaking to you. I never delivered a single one of those 5 2-hour speeches. Bill, there's nothing more frustrating than spending the time to work up a speech and then have to decide with integrity that it isn't the thing to do. It just really upsets you. I've got some awfully good speeches. If you'd invite me sometime, I'd like to make them. But we just got into a discussion, and we talked to each other. You know what their agenda is? The 4 things. 1, time, money, peers, and hurt. I was having dinner with Dr. Melba Baldwin the other night. She's just going to Belfast, Ireland to speak on the American problems with young women and modern health. She's a medical lecturer. She said, Fred, I heard you talk about that. Said, do you know that is exactly what my paper's on? My paper's on money, time, and peers. So that's the agenda. You know, I don't know where we've gotten all this hurried agenda. A lot of people, you know, think they're on the fast track when they're on the frantic track. There's a big difference. I enjoy the fast track, but man, deliver me from that frantic track. I heard that little poem that I like, you know, when in trouble, when in doubt, run in circles, scream and shout. And I see people who are just absolutely frantic. Like the guy who calls his friend, he said, where'd I get you? He said, in the car. Oh, he said, that's strange that I'm calling you from my car. First fellow said, would you hold the phone? The other phone's ringing. you know, we get into so many crazy fads, and being rushed is one of them. I remember in the 50s in New York when I was doing a lot of business in New York, it got to be a fad to have a psychiatrist. And then you'd be sitting there working out some kind of a serious deal, pretty heavy money, and the old boy said, I've got to leave because my psychiatrist is waiting for me. Now, that gives you great confidence. And, you know, a lot of them didn't need a psychiatrist until they started going to one. Then they needed one. But you know, we get these fads, and I think right now we're in a tremendous fad of being rushed. I was reading an article this past week on fast foods, and this gal who's writing it said a very philosophical thing. She said, haste is now a status symbol. Now, something's wrong when just being rushed is a status symbol. I mean, we're bound to find something better than that. But people are afraid not to be hurried. People call me and they say, oh, I know you're busy. I say, no, I'm not. I was half asleep when you called. And it just shakes them up. You know, they just can't believe it. Well, I get these letters, you know, thank you for interrupting your busy schedule. And I always laugh. It's gotten to be, you know, phrases. We're so hurried. We're so rushed. About what? I ran into the airport to a banker, president of a company up in Oklahoma. I said to him, how you going? He said, rushed. You're not supposed to ask any questions after that. You're supposed to accept that that is absolutely right. I said, what you rushed about? He said, overworked. I said, whose work are you doing? He stopped and looked at me and he said, the cashier's. I said, how long are you going to do it? He said, as soon as I get back, I'll straighten that out. I don't imagine the cashier's happy we ran together. But I really think that we ought to drop this thing of being rushed as one of the status symbols. You know, the Greeks used to defend leisure of the wealthy class on the basis that only in leisure could you think about great ideas. And this was their defense for leisure. I agree with it. We just, we ought, you know, unless you're going to go through here twice. Now, I know a lot of people evidently going through twice. Because this time they're going so fast they're not seeing a darn thing. Now, I'm only going to go through once. And I got to smell the roses a little bit along the way. I've got to enjoy life. You know, I thought one of the reasons for making money was so you have control of your life. Seems to me the people who are making the most money got the least control of their life. Something screwy. Oh, we had a wonderful time talking to these singles about that. You know, singles are afraid of being left out of any activity. Because being alone means they're unattractive. Yet I know guys who run into cocktail parties, they're bored to tears, they get home, they say, why did I go to that? And yet they'll be right back the next night. Going, doing things that make no sense whatsoever. Because they don't have control of their life. Time's a big thing. Second thing, money. I'm not going to talk a whole lot about money. I have great respect for money. I mean, you don't come out of the poor circumstances I came out of and not have respect for money. I found out very early in life without money, you couldn't do anything. But money's a means. Money's not an end. I worked with 125 young couples. We spent all day Saturday talking about money. Do you know, I found they had no priority for spending. They had no priority. And we worked out a priority of five things. It's very helpful. You know, the thing that bothers me, Bill, you know, we ought to be talking about these subjects in the church. You know, but we think because you're not talking Bible, you're not talking prayer, you're not talking spiritual. I mean, how can people be sitting there in financial trouble up to their neck and have Bill, you know, give the benediction, now go in peace, when they're facing the bill collector on Monday? I mean, there's not a whole lot of peace between Sunday service and the Monday bill collector. I attended a session of 50 executives, one of the local churches, to talk about investments. And they're taking their whole life and going through in what they call a growth program. And they're very serious. They're taking a Saturday morning, one morning a month. And they're going through their whole life. That makes sense. It's not, you know, a bishop, an English bishop 200 years ago said a wonderful thing. He said, never make the mistake of thinking God is only interested in the religious. You know, it could be that he made the rest of it. But we have hemmed Christ and we've hemmed the Father into just the things that are religious. He's interested in the whole life. He came to where I have life and have it abundantly. Third thing on the agenda, and that is peers. Peers break up into two things, it seemed to me, as I talked to these people, and they were informing me. One is peer relationship. One of the plagues we have in the church today is how little change can I make in my life and still be a Christian. How little change can I make in my life and still be a Christian? We haven't thought about maximizing our lives, but minimizing them. What's the relationship? I think the verse of Scripture there is very helpful. Be not conformed to this world, but be transformed. Don't let the outside pressures mold you. I see people buying clothes they can't afford. They're riding bicycles out of Newport Beach so much, and they're all dressed the same way. They had uniforms on. I mean, you can't breathe without a breathing uniform. And I checked on the price of those things. You know, they're paying $100 for those things that look like they're sprayed-on pants. And then you got to buy shoes, you got to buy bike. I mean, it's costly just to ride a bicycle. And you may have sense enough to give it up very shortly. I mean, there is your investment. Terrible. But, you know, these fads go across. Peer pressure. Not only peer relations. It's all right to be liked. How else could we have community? If we didn't want to like each other and be like each other, how could we have community? We couldn't. But the price is too high to be liked when you lose your respect. We talked about it's much more important to be respected. If you're going to be a leader, be respected. Don't be liked. Now, if you can be liked and respected, wonderful. But never give up respect for just being liked. You lose your power when you're liked. You have power when you're respected. And we do that by being transformed from inside. Let me tell you a story in closing that has some, I think, real meaning. After I spoke to those singles, a little gal came up almost hysterical. A little sparrow of a girl, really not very attractive. She had this scared look in her face, and she said to me, "How long are you going to be in town?" I said, 3 or 4 days, but I'm tied up with friends. She said, "I want to talk to you." I said, "I'll give you my phone. Would you call me?" I found that you can do a marvelous job of talking to people over the phone. A lot of times it's better than really facing them because they can be more comfortable. You remember Freud was the fellow who originated the couch. You know why? So you wouldn't have to look at him. He wouldn't have to look at you. And you could talk more freely. I find telephone does the same thing. And so she called me, and we talked for an hour. Very familiar story. Unattractive girl, came here from Europe, been here 5 years, came here a very happy Christian, fell in with a predatory male. They went too far. Now she said, "Fred, all I do now is cry. All I do is cry." Said, "I'm Christian, he's not Christian." And then she asked me the guilt questions. They always come. She said, "Fred, do you think God will keep me from ever having a husband because of this?" I remember I was speaking in Austin. A young man stayed after the meeting and said to me, "Fred, what do you say to my wife? We've just lost a 2-year-old son." And then he said, "Do you think God took him because of my sins?" I said, "You got the wrong concept of God. You don't know the same God I do." And I wrote his wife. She wrote me back and said she read the letter many times. These are different concepts, but guilt always causes you to ask questions and always brings judgment. And then she said, "Fred, can I ever be white again?" She didn't use the English language like we do. She meant clean. Can I be clean again? I said, "This is the whole story of the gospel. This is the gospel. God forgives." Now do me a favor. When God forgives you, forgive yourself. When you don't forgive yourself, you're putting yourself above God. Who are you to damn yourself when God doesn't damn you? The story of the gospel is forgiveness. Accept it. And I said, "Be clean, yes. Though your sins be as scarlet, they shall be as white as wool. Though they be red like crimson, yes, you can be clean." That's the gospel. That's what I would have liked to have told those two girls who said, "This is all I got." That's a lot. Heavenly Father, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for these friends. Thank you for the opportunity of just talking about things that make sense. Maybe it'd make a difference in our life. For Christ's sake.